Welcome to Ambleside Flourish, brought to you by Ambleside Schools International.
Calming the Troubled Heart, written by Dr. Bill St. Cyr and read by Mary Ellen St. Cyr. We humans are destined to live in troubled times, as novelist and screenwriter William Golden so eloquently puts it in The Princess Bride. Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something. Goldman echoes the words of Jesus, who made this clear to his followers. In the world, you will have tribulation. Anyone who is paying attention knows this to be true. Trouble, sometimes more, sometimes less, is the norm, not the exception. The sooner one comes to accept this, the happier he or she will be. The church has always taught, and I have come to see it, as true that in troubled times, the primary problems are inevitably troubled, disordered hearts. In no way do I deny that troubles are real, they are, and that they are often quite serious, they are, and that they need to be addressed, they often but not always are. Indeed, every man, every woman is called to do what he or she can do to alleviate the groanings of the world. I only suggest that when one's heart is troubled, we are not very good at making things better, but tend toward paralyzation or polarization. There are neurological reasons for this. First, a brain that is negative, neutral, or stressed is about 30% less efficient than a joyful or peaceful brain. In other words, troubled brains are primed to make bad decisions. Second, when troubled and unsure how to get out of the trouble, the brain's relational circuits begin to shut down. These networks of neurons are the brain's structures that allow us to accurately read the minds of others and empathize. When they shut down, we are flying blind, unbeknownst to us. Third, when our relational circuits start shutting down, as things get more distressing and we feel more alone, we start to lose the executive function of our frontal lobes. When this happens, the so-called reptilian brain starts to call the responses. We are left with the options of fight, flight, or freeze. Fourth, for humans, confirmation bias, the tendency to believe anything that supports what we already believe and disbelieve anything to the contrary, becomes a vicious cycle. Our brains would rather not have their existing neural networks challenged. In a troubled brain state, this increases. The more troubled the brain, the greater the cognitive rigidity and the greater the confirmation bias. Finally, as a protective measure, when relational circuits are down, we tend to imagine the worst outcomes and cannot be persuaded otherwise, leading us down an aimless path, which supports and increases our distress. We have all experienced this troubled state to some degree with ourselves and others. It is bleak in the least, and at its worst, a pervasive hopelessness, despair, and loneliness that acts as a reality in the present moment. Not a good time to make decisions. Yet often in this state, one wants to do something. In the simplest of troubles, for example, if one's heart is troubled by a leaky faucet, the trouble may be resolved by fixing the faucet. But if one's heart is troubled by some peccadillo of a spouse, it is extremely unlikely that the trouble will be resolved by fixing the spouse. Seeking to cure a troubled heart by managing and controlling circumstances is an illusion, an alluring fancy, doomed to fail. Equally vain is the attempt to cure a troubled heart by obsessively ruminating over all that is wrong with the person and extending this globally to the world at large. If we are to address the troubles in our homes, in our schools, in our businesses, in our cities, and in our country, we must first address our own troubled hearts. But how? In what follows, I do not mean to suggest an easy, quick fix, only to propose a few important principles. Deep wounds can take a long time to heal. Relatively minor wounds can fester and become infected, particularly if they mirror earlier wounds. While change can come quickly, in my experience, it usually takes time, often a great deal of time, which seems a real downer. To some measure, it is for all of us a long pursuit. But what is the alternative? We move forward or we regress back. Given that we never fully comprehend the depth of someone's journey, even our own, We never condemn a person for their place on the road. If we do, we become part of the problem rather than part of the solution. When one's heart becomes troubled, stays troubled, and is unable to get untroubled, the brain has encountered a trouble bigger than it knows how to process. As a general rule, what troubles us today troubled us yesterday and has the potential to trouble us tomorrow. Growth is a process of perseverance over time. Again, I do not mean to suggest an easy, quick fix. Recovering from a troubled heart is often a long and difficult journey. What I do want to suggest is that we are not designed to make this journey alone. There is nothing more painful than being alone with a deeply troubled heart. When no one knows me, no one gets me. My heart screams or turns to stone. What we all desperately need is someone who will see what our troubled heart is seeing. It does not require agreement regarding the right or wrong of what is seen. To use a simple example of teacher with student, I can see that there's a lot of work to be done here, and you think you can't get it all done. Tell me about that. Empathize, enter into and reflect back, both verbally and non-verbally, what our troubled heart is feeling. This amount of work feels overwhelming. How would you describe the feeling of overwhelm? How big is it? I usually feel overwhelmed in my stomach, shoulders, and face. Where do you feel it? Recognize that which is relationally, psychologically, and spiritually damaging, what the Bible calls sin, and name it without condemnation. You seem desperately concerned about doing better than everyone else. That is not good for your heart, and no one wants this kind of turmoil for you, especially our Father. Is there anything I can do to help you let go of the anxious desire to best all others? Could we ask God to help you let it go? Facilitate our appreciation and thanksgiving. It seems that for a while now, your attention light has been focused on that which overwhelms. For a few moments, would you be willing to give your troubled heart a break by remembering and giving attention to a time, place, person, or thing for which you felt appreciation and thankfulness? Describe this time. How would you describe the feeling of appreciation? Give us the gift of sacred presence. Sacred presence is a way of being with another that is difficult to describe. Best to remember a time and a place when your heart was troubled and someone was truly present. What was it like? What would it be like to be present to another? We are meant to support one another along the way, to bear one another's burdens, to ease troubled hearts. We need parents to do this for their children, teachers for students, friends for one another, husbands for wives, and wives for husbands. The more skilled we become at doing these, the less troubled will be the hearts of our children, teachers, friends, husbands, and wives. And yet there's still another way, not better so as to replace, but to amplify, augment, raise to a greater fullness. Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water from the well will be thirsty again, but those who drink from the water that I will give them will never be thirsty. The water that I will give will become in them a spring of water gushing up to eternal life." For many, these are just words, but to those who have learned to drink, they are life. If a caring, mature person can bring peace to the troubled heart, how much more the God, the Father of our hearts? But like all forms of intimacy, to drink spiritual life is a learned skill. While at times God breaks into a troubled heart with overwhelming grace, the norm is that His grace beckons us to pursue, to hunger and thirst for Him. There are many ways of learning and practicing the skill of intimacy with God. Two such practices are Lectio Divina and devotional journaling. Like human relations, intimacy with God requires the cultivation of certain skills. These skills take practice. As a rule, the skills of spiritual intimacy are best practiced and learned in times of relative peace. The skills will then be in place when the trouble comes. One of the great trouble multipliers is the illusion of a quick and simple fix. We must not expect it. The most significant balm for the soul is, "You are not alone." Finally, if while still young, a person learns the skills of recovering from a troubled heart, he or she will be much better prepared for facing the troubles that life inevitably brings. Learning such skills are an essential part of an Ambleside education.
Ambleside Schools International fosters an educational renewal based upon the pedagogical insights of British educator Charlotte Mason. Serving an international community of parents, teachers, and schools, Ambleside makes a living education accessible to all. For additional information regarding Ambleside Schools International and training opportunities for principals, teachers, and parents, please visit our website at AmblesideSchools.com.